This is the Tom Hartmann Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartmann here with you. So, is it time to reclaim the word socialism? Or maybe just to claim it? Because even Franklin Roosevelt was accused of being a socialist back in the day by the Republicans. And he rejected that. He said, no, I'm not a socialist. I'm an American. And this is the American way. And this is the American tradition. And this is the American, you know, social security. We're all in this together. It was the nurturing family model of how a country should be run as opposed to the severe father model. And, you know, we're all in this together. We care about each other. We care for each other. It's our job collectively to be here for each other. Increasingly, though, that word socialism, democratic socialism specifically, has been used now for the better part of 30, 40 years in Northern European countries. Certainly the Scandinavian countries embrace it with enthusiasm. Yes, I mean, Louise and I, we did our show. We did this show for 2 weeks from Denmark back, six, 7 years ago, some long time ago. And I had on, you know, a bunch of Danish politicians, Danish news reporters, and everybody was like, yes, we're a democratic socialist country. We have social democracy, I think was the phrase that they used more often than not. And the idea was that almost half of the entire GDP of Denmark is in the government sector right now, because the government pays for all of your education all the way up to an MD, and they pay you, you know, a couple hundred bucks a month to get that education. In other words, to cover your room and board and your food and your books. They pay for your medical services, and it's quite comprehensive, and it's completely, you know, it's totally comprehensive. They subsidize housing. They subsidize employment. They subsidize employers with, you know, long-term unemployment benefits and other things like that. Now, we subsidize employers here in the United States with food stamps and with housing assistance to low-income people. But I think most Americans don't realize that that is a subsidy to low-wage employers, that people would not work at McDonald's and at Walmart and at 7-Eleven and at fill-in-the-blank. They would not work those jobs if they did not have government support, if they couldn't get food stamps, if they couldn't get housing support, if they couldn't get Medicaid, if they didn't qualify for cheap or free medical assistance. If they couldn't get those things, they literally could not afford to take those jobs. So these payments that we're providing to working poor people are not subsidies to the working poor, the way the Republican Party likes to characterize them. They're subsidies to the employers, because if those subsidies weren't there, the employers would be forced to offer higher wages because nobody would want to work for them. Because, I mean, why work for $7 an hour when you end up in the hole? So, anyhow, I kind of wandered far afield from my original topic, which is it time to reclaim the word socialism from the dirty word category? Elizabeth Brunig, writing about this over at commondreams.org, she says 57% of Democrats polled said they view socialism positively. Only 47% of Democrats view capitalism positively. That's down from 56%. Republicans, 71% love capitalism, and only 16% of Republicans think that socialism is a good thing. But here's the thing, and this really troubles me. I saw this, I've seen this twice over the weekend, both times on MSNBC, but maybe it's just because I watch that more than I watch CNN. But in both cases, I heard commentators say that people like socialism more than capitalism, and, you know, and therefore, quack, quack, quack. And the problem is that democratic socialism is not anti-capitalistic at all. Democratic socialism envisions a massive role for capitalism in our economy. Basically, the private sector is left as the private sector. All democratic socialism advocates is that the commons, the public sector, should be robust, that it should be healthy, it should be strong, that your ability to get an education should be unquestioned. Your ability to get health care should be unquestioned. Your ability to retire at the end of your work life and live a dignified life to old age and death should be unquestioned. That the right of people to have a successful pregnancy and give birth without fear of death. Keep in mind, the United States has the highest maternal death rate in the developed world. Our maternal death rate is as bad as it is in some of the really underdeveloped and undeveloped parts of Southern Asia and Africa, and presumably parts of South America, although there's not a single country there that is as badly afflicted as in Asia and Africa. But this is like, this is not anti-capitalist. Democratic socialism coexists with capitalism. And just this breathtaking ignorance that I'm seeing on the part of mainstream and corporate media commentators saying that capitalism is inconsistent with democratic socialism, it just blows my mind. And I think that it further confuses things. People watch TV and they go, oh, well, you get to pick between socialism and capitalism? Well, yeah, if you want to use Marxist metrics, but, you know, this is not, we're not talking about Marxist socialism. Karl Marx used the word socialism. He should have used the word communism, and later on he did. But democratic socialism is not communism. Yes, communism stands in opposition to capitalism, and capitalism stands in opposition to communism. I get that. I agree with that. But when Democrats are talking about socialism, we are not talking about communism. We're talking about what we already have. America is already a socialist nation. We just do it badly. We have Social Security, but most people actually can't retire on it. We have Medicare and Medicaid, but it doesn't cover all your expenses. It doesn't even cover getting your teeth cleaned. We have, a long-term unemployment, but the Republicans cut it from 2 years down to 1 year, and then they cut it from 1 year down to 6 months. We have job retraining programs, but they're pretty ineffective. They've been largely privatized, and they're being run by scam for-profit colleges. And you know, Trump wants to put all that under Betsy DeVos's purview. So, yeah, we have socialism in the United States. We have food stamps, but, you know, $3 a day, can you live on $3 a day? We just don't do it well. And the countries that do it well have lower maternal death rates, have lower rates of mental illness, have lower rates of death from all kinds of diseases, including heart disease and cancer, have lower rates of suicide, have lower rates of homicide, have less corruption in their body politic. And, you know, we're at the bottom on all of those things, on all the metrics for all those things. And I would argue that and by the way, the countries that do it well have less inequality as well. And we know that as inequality rises, so does crime, so does suicide, so does mental illness, so does teenage pregnancy, so does the rate of sexually transmitted diseases, so does drug addiction. All of these social ills have a almost one-to-one correlation between rising inequality and rising problems. And we have among the worst in the world. The UK and the United States are the worst, because we had Reagan and they had Thatcher. And we both embraced neoliberalism with a gusto. And the consequence of that is, and you know, we used to solve this with high tax rates. That's how you, the way that you challenge unequal wealth distribution, wealth inequality, the way you challenge that is by raising taxes on very, very rich people and on high levels of income. It's real simple. It worked just fine. Before the Reagan tax cuts, the average CEO in America only made 20 times what his employees make. And it was usually his back then, too. Now, so you've got CEOs that are making over 300, over 400, over 500 times what their workers are making. That's absurd. You don't have to pay CEOs that much to do the job. American business wasn't crippled or kneecapped or dysfunctional before the Reagan tax cuts. And then the Bush tax cuts, and now the Trump tax cuts. It's just straightforward stuff. If you want to have a country where that works, that has any measure of democratic socialism, and we have a lot of it, then make it work properly. Fully fund the Veterans Administration. Fully fund Social Security. Fully fund Medicare and Medicaid. Fully fund food stamps. Yeah, you might have to raise taxes on rich people to make that happen. You might have to raise taxes on Wall Street to make that happen. That's a good thing. That reduces inequality and makes our society healthier.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So the question, is it time to reclaim the word socialism, or should we just go around it? Or is it time to reinvent the word socialism? Your calls after this. And welcome back. Zach in Hollywood, watching us on Free Speech TV. Hey, Zach, what's on your mind today?
Morning, Tom. Just an observation. We all know and we all saw all the way through 15 and 16, the media, the corporate media, was wall-to-wall Trump. We know that. And they were selling. And the point I'm trying to make is that we really do live in a market structure. We don't live in a we live in a non-socialized market structure. And they're selling cars, hamburgers, and designer drugs all throughout 15 and 16, all along the way. And all the anchors were making bank on that. And now they're making bank, trying to come down on the right side of history, still selling cars, hamburgers, and designer drugs, if we just look at what's going on. And I just would like to ask a question. What is the penalty for high treason? And has there ever been a conviction of high treason in this country?
Yeah, Benedict Arnold. I'm quite sure there have been others.
For high treason?
It runs a spectrum. I mean, at the high end, it's death by firing squad. But then, Benedict Arnold was banished from the country, as I recall. I'd have to go back and read the history. It's been probably 50 years since I did.
So he slipped out.
Yeah, I guess the question is in what context? I mean, if you're the president of the United States, the penalty for high treason is impeachment.
So something changed along the way.
No, it's in the Constitution.
So that is the sentence?
Yeah, the idea was that the president is not subject, at least on a cursory level, to oversight by the courts individually. Now, you know, we know now that that is not an absolute right. Nixon v. U.S., or U.S. v. Nixon, I guess, was the case. And then we saw the same thing in Paula Jones versus Clinton. Those two cases, the Supreme Court ruled that the president was not above the law. So there is some law that can be inflicted upon the president. But generally speaking, at the founding of the Republic, and to this day, the idea is that if the president commits high crimes and misdemeanors, and by the way, the Constitution specifically says that in cases of impeachment and treason, the president cannot use his pardon powers. But,
and they're breaking constitutional law.
I agree, but that's, given our current system, that's up to the Supreme Court to decide. But the bottom line is that the solution to a president committing treason, or at least the primary solution, the first solution, is impeachment. Get the guy out of office. And then you can go after him as a private citizen. And I think a lot of us are looking at that going, yeah, that would be a good step. Just get this guy out of office.
Boy, it's going to be hard.
I agree.
These guys are so slippery.
Well, it's not just that. The main reason why Donald Trump has not sagged as badly as he could have under all of this is Fox News. Fox News is providing information to a significant portion of America. And those people...
I was a Bernie voter in the primary big time, and then I went and voted for Hillary. And we were up 13 points, remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
13 points. And then the next morning, everything dropped out.
Yeah. It's, and that's, unfortunately, right now, that's ancient history, Zach. But I'm with you. And, the question, what do we do with Donald Trump if it turns out that he has conspired to defraud the United States of a clean election by having a corrupted election, corrupted specifically in this case by the Russians? What do we do? I think we impeach him. We'll be back. Welcome back, Mac in Charleston, South Carolina. Hey, Mac, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom, thank you for taking my call, and I'll be brief. My concern is about the voting system. I remember during the Vietnam War, I got drafted in 68. They should set the voting system up like the Selective Service system. They had no problems finding us, dressing us up, and sending us into combat. If they set the voting system up like the Selective Service system in all 50 states, we wouldn't have this issue. When it comes time to vote, we would get a letter from the president that says, "Greetings from the President of the United States. It's time to vote."
I agree.
And
I completely agree, Mac. And we need to have
it's really not that complicated at all, because everybody in my hometown got drafted during the Vietnam War. And just as a matter of fact,
yep.
I'm from a very small town, and we lost 10 soldiers in Vietnam.
Wow. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. The federal government does know who we are, and they know where we are, and they know
absolutely.
How old we are. And
they can get their hands on us whenever they want.
The other thing, Mac, is why is it that in the last 2 years of high school, as part of the civics education, our high schools, you know, given that we don't have this national registration process in place right now, why aren't high schools helping high school students go out and register to vote themselves?
How about that?
Yeah, I think, you know, just...
Conspiracy.
Yeah. Oh, it absolutely is a conspiracy. This all came out of Jim Crow.
Absolutely. It's a conspiracy to defraud the person out of their ability to vote.
Yeah, absolutely. Well said,
well,
Mac.
Thank you very much. And I'll continue to support you guys.
Thank you, Mac. And thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. Let's see here. David in Nantucket, Connecticut, or Naugatuck, Connecticut. Am I saying that right, David? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't push the right button. David in Naugatuck, Connecticut. Am I saying your town right?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Cool. Great. Yeah, just fine.
Now, there are a couple of things that I would like to say, and I think the religious right should look into this. There was a couple of decisions that were made by the Supreme Court involving the American flag. And what they said was that you don't have to pledge allegiance in the schoolroom, and you don't have to salute the American flag. There are several decisions on that.
Right. They also said you can burn the flag.
The Supreme Court decisions, you can actually relay it on your program. And another decision was on the American flag, the burning of it in Texas. And the thing is, Texas versus Johnson, 491 U.S. 397.
Yes, I agree. The Supreme Court has said that you can burn the flag as a matter of political expression. And
well, see, the reason you could do that, and I'll cite it to you because I got it right in front of me, and it's underlined. Hold on.
But what's your point, David? Why are you telling me this?
Well, my point is you have the right to demonstrate, and this all involves with the right to demonstrate.
Right.
And if they cancel the right to demonstrate on any person, it's a violation of your First Amendment. And then
are you talking about the NFL football players?
The First Amendment goes to Fourth, Fifth, and Eighth.
David, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Are you talking about the NFL football players?
Well, yes, it could relate to them. Yes.
Well, but the government is not the agency that is restricting their.
I understand that, but the government was subsidizing it, and as subsidizing it, they could control it.
Well, arguably, but they're no longer subsidizing it. So, but David, thank you. Thanks for sharing that. I mean, it's important information to know, you know, all of these things. David, from David to David. This is David in Watchburg, Tennessee. Hey, David, what's up?
Oh, I'm just sitting here watching you today, buddy.
Oh, thank you.
Good job.
What's up? So, what's on your mind?
Oh, I was talking about the impeachment. I was like, I don't think I'm like the other guy. I don't believe that's really strong enough. And since Trump wants to put this country in reverse, they'd go back to public executions for him. Wouldn't be too bad, in my opinion. But
wait a minute. You're talking public execution for whom?
Trump.
Oh, no. Don't even go there. No, David, I'm going to stop this right now because, you know, you can't talk like that. I mean, you just can't. It's not only wrong, it's probably also illegal. So, no. Mark in San Diego. Hey, Mark, we got a half a minute here. You got a quick point to make? No, Mark. Okay. Apparently not a quick point. And I'm, you know, it's just not fair to put anybody else on with only 30 seconds. Let me just share with you this Vote Vets. Vote Vets is a great organization of veterans, and Donald Trump has blocked them on his Twitter feed. So anyhow, they just tweeted, remember your oath to protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Think twice before following this man's order in a crisis. You might first consider throwing down your stars. Now we're seeing over 100 intelligence officials coming out and saying, strip me of my security clearance. Go ahead, make my day. At what point does this spread from outside the intelligence community into the military? And people in the military start saying, okay, enough already. We'll be back with your calls and more of the news of the day right after this.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
It's talk media for the sane among us. 27 and a half minutes past the hour. Back with your calls after this. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman Program, helping you win the water cooler wars. And James in San Diego. Hey, James, what's up?
Hi. So, you know, I've been a Republican my whole life. I'm sad to admit I voted for Hillary this time because I did not like Trump. I live right by Tijuana. Most of my friends are Mexican, and I didn't like a lot of the, not necessarily what he said, but what he said brought people out that felt empowered to spew their racist crap and all that. So I voted for Hillary. The problem is now we've been a couple years or whatever, and
18
I don't
months.
See him spewing that stuff anymore. And the problem is deciding who to vote for next time. I've got four kids to feed. My 401k is higher than it's ever been, and I got a raise at work, and I'm getting more of my check than I've ever gotten. So tell me why I shouldn't vote for him.
Well, you must be a high-income white guy. The simple reality is if you make less than $70,000 a year in the United States, your wages have actually gone down. Inflation is 2.9%. Wage growth is 2.7%. And if you work by the hour instead of a salary, and I'm sure you're on a salary if you've got a 401k, if you work out by the hour, your wages have actually gone down about 2%.
In the last year and a half?
Yeah.
Well, all I know is I feel like I have more buying power. But, you know, the other thing...
I don't know why that would be. You're seeing prices, you know, inflation's almost 3% right now. I think that you're mistaking the stock. You're making a fundamental error here, James, and that is thinking that the stock market is the economy. The stock market is one of many indicators of the economy. I think the most important one is wage growth. And we haven't seen substantial wage growth since Reagan's first tax cuts.
Well, maybe I need to look more into, I'm not an economist, obviously, but I need to look more into that. The other thing, and I'll let this go because you're going to call me a racist and everything after that, but every single time I turn on your station, because I try to balance it out, I listen to you and MSNBC and Fox and the others from all spectrums trying to divide, like, who, I don't know, where we're really at. And it's so hard with where news is to actually find out just what's happening without the spin.
Sure.
And the thing is, every single time I turn on Progressive, every single time, I can count within the first minute somebody brings up race. Like that dude just talking about, oh, they can find us for the draft, but they can't find us to vote. Well, if you're an adult, you want to go vote, go sign up as a registrar and vote. I don't know why that's a racist thing.
You've got about 25% of America who every single day when they wake up and walk out of the house have to be concerned about somebody hurting them, killing them, diminishing their job opportunities, arresting them, shooting them, simply because of the color of their skin. And I get it. You know, you and I are white guys, and we don't wake up worrying about how the color of our skin is going to influence our day. It's something we don't think about pretty much ever, unless, you know, something's right in front of us that forces us to think about it, and that makes us uncomfortable. I get that, James, but don't you think that if a quarter of the country, and it's probably actually a little larger number than that, if a quarter of the country is living in fear of just the normal cycles and pulses of life in America, that we all have an obligation to do something about that?
Well, of course. Absolutely.
Then shouldn't we be talking about race?
In other big cities, but I'm talking about voting. Are they saying they can't leave their host to go vote because they're afraid, like Baghdad, they're going to get shot down in the street because they're voting?
Well, no, but they're going to get banned. I mean, you've got the one of the most black counties in Georgia right now has 9 polling places. And the Secretary of State of Georgia, who is running for governor against Stacey Abrams, she's black, he's white, he's running against her. He has proposed shutting down 7 of the 9 polling places in this very rural, very black county in Georgia, so that many of the people in order to vote are going to have to travel 20, 30 miles. And this is a county that has the lowest rate of car ownership in the state, or one of the lowest rates in the state.
Well, that should be flat out illegal if that's happening.
I agree. And this is the stuff, you know, when people are talking about race on this program, typically it's in the context of actual real stuff like that.
Well, in that case, I mean, in that case specifically, the state ought to come in and say, whatever Supreme Court or whatever, and say, no, you have to have a certain number of polling places per 1,000 people per district.
I agree.
Or whatever.
I agree, but the state Supreme Court is not doing that. See, under the Voting Rights Act, any state that had a history of Jim Crow laws, like, you know, this kind of thing, you know, where they just make it hard for people of color to vote, black people to vote, had to clear with the federal government any changes, like shutting down polling places. They had to pass that through the Department of Justice before they could do it and prove that it wasn't being done for racial purposes. Now that the Supreme Court has blown, the Supreme Court blew that up. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, the Supreme Court said, and this just kind of blew my mind, we no longer have a problem in the United States of people not being allowed to vote because of their race. And so, therefore, we no longer have to enforce the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And immediately, I mean, literally the same day that decision came down, three states, Texas, I believe it was North Carolina, and the other one was somewhere in the Midwest, might have been Wisconsin, announced that they were going to draconian voter ID measures, and they were going to review all of the polling places and dial back the number of polling places in areas where people of color vote. I mean, it is so transparent. It is so obvious. Democrats talk about it, and Republicans go, oh, you're talking about race again. Yeah, this is wrong.
Well, an event, a case like that, absolutely, where
this is the Republican Party's principal strategy to win elections, James, is to disenfranchise people who want to vote. I mean, you've got.
Well, I got to tell you, with Trump, you know, I'm not a huge fan. Like I said, I voted for Hillary. I was throwing up my mouth, but at the same time, I just couldn't stand that. You know, I guess I'm more libertarian, or so. I wish we had a third damn option, because I'm not left. I believe in gun rights. I think abortion, I mean, you ever hear a 7-month baby's heartbeat on a monitor? I have, because I have four of them. I believe in, I hate these assholes that kneel for the flag.
Yeah, I'm sorry, James, I got to stop you right there. You can't use that kind of language on the air, I'm sorry. You know, and yeah, so you hate people who are kneeling for the flag. But apropos of the voting, James, if you're still listening on your radio, and my apologies to any of our listeners who might have, I think we bleeped that out. Thank you. That obscenity. But this is the basically the founder or co-founder of the Heritage Foundation and a number of the other right-wing think tanks. He was helping to run the Reagan campaign in 1980 when he said this to a group of Republican Christian activists in the basement of a church in Texas. A couple of hundred Republican activists who were all very active in Christianity. This is Paul Weyrich.
How many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome?
Here, we'll start it over again. Hang on just a second here. Okay. I don't have you. Oh, you don't have it. Okay, I'll do it some other time. Paul Weyrich basically came right out and said, you know, I don't want everybody to vote. Quite candidly, our voting, our leverage in the elections goes up as the voting populace goes down. It was just that simple. Daryl in Kearney, Nebraska. Hey, Daryl, what's on your mind today?
It's Dale, Tom.
Oh, Dale, I'm sorry. What's up?
No, that's fine. Hey, I don't know how you do it, quite honestly.
But, well, step by step.
Issues one, huh?
Step by step, caller by caller.
Yeah, several issues, though, to address the issue. The caller that just called about kneeling.
Mm-hmm.
I lost my only brother in the military in Germany, and I have very vivid memory of the gentleman kneeling to hand me his flag.
Wow.
So they can think about that.
Yeah.
And also, the gentleman that called in about the stock market, I'm a 34 veteran of the market. And I would suggest you might try to get Nomi Prinz on.
Oh, yeah, we've talked to her a number of times.
Brilliant, brilliant lady.
She really is, yeah.
They think that the rise of the stock market is an indicator of the economy, and you're totally right. It's not. And it's simply been rising because the Federal Reserve printing money called quantitative easing, they've channeled all that to the top 5 or 6 investment banks, which have turned around, instead of trickling it down to everybody, they've used it to buy back their stock. And so that's what's happened, is that's been the...
Well, it's not just those banks. The other big stock, you know, over $1 trillion of stock buybacks are going to happen this year. We're on course for $1 trillion. And most of that is the $1.5 trillion tax cut that took effect this year.
Absolutely. And then also, with all the trillions that's floating around out there, instead of making the people that got the money pay it back, this is why they've imposed sequestration and austerity on the working people around the world.
Yep. But, I agree.
Anyway, I just wanted to make that point and support you, Tom. You're doing a great job.
So. Thanks a lot, Dale. I appreciate it. And thank you for the call. And thanks for watching us there in Nebraska. what a day, huh? We've got some fantastic callers in all directions. Kenneth in Seattle, you want to get back to the discussion of impeachment?
Yes. Here's my reason why we should discuss it. And my answer to the usual objection. The usual objection is Congress won't do anything because it's all Republican. And I brought this up to a friendly acquaintance, and he was dismissive, utterly dismissive. And the reason I brought it up is that Trump had just announced that he was canceling the treaty to Iran. As I understand it, canceling a treaty is violating a treaty.
That's correct.
And a treaty, as I understand it, is second only to the Constitution in being the law of the land. So that's already an impeachable offense.
Treaties are actually above the Constitution. If we signed a treaty,
that
abrogated First Amendment free speech rights, that would become the law of the land.
Okay, I stand corrected. Okay, so it's impeachable already, right there, along with all the other things. Now, I mentioned this to a friend. He's utterly dismissive, disdainful dismissive.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. Congress is not going to do anything. What he was overlooking and what other people overlook is that we don't just have to be reactive to that fact. There's a matter of long-term response. There's a matter of building momentum. There's a matter of eventually shaming the Republicans, bring into it the effect of worldwide opinion, showing the Republicans to be not very short of being a gangster operation.
Yeah.
And it takes time to do that. So, yes, we should talk it. We'll fail to actually bring it about. But there's this long-term effect. There's no sense in throwing in the towel and giving up because of an immediate reaction. There's a matter of long-term response, and we can help develop it. So,
yeah,
we should talk it up.
Amen. Okay, Kenneth, thank you. Your vote is recorded, and good on you. Bill in Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Bill, what's up? Thanks for listening to SiriusXM. Bill in Richmond, you're on the air.
Yeah. All right, Tom, I'm sorry. I turned the phone upside down.
It's all good.
Listen, I want to ask this question about Denmark because there was an article in a Richmond paper yesterday by one of the economists at UVA, and I keep hearing this combination about Denmark and Scandinavia.
Right.
And you can go through by the numbers and take a look that beside the obvious size that Denmark is 6 million people, we're 327 million people, 85% of the population was fairly homogenous. They're Danish. That certainly isn't the case here.
No, 75% of our population is.
Pardon me?
I think 74% of our population is white.
Well, no, it's not saying white. That's not what they're saying. In Denmark, they're Danish. They were native Danes.
Yeah.
In this country, name somebody that you could... I mean, you certainly couldn't come up with that figure.
So you're suggesting that our nation, that we should do like Israel did and just say, you know, you're only really a citizen of this country if your genes look like this?
That's not what the article was, because this was written by an economist. But this is what caught my attention. The marginal tax rate in Denmark hits the middle class harder than it does here.
Yeah, I know. Do you know what the minimum wage is in Copenhagen for, you know, what McDonald's pays?
No, I don't.
I believe it's $24 an hour. And the reason why is because about half of that is going to taxes. But in exchange for that, and this is the point, I keep making this point and people seem not to understand it. If you look at the history of taxation in the United States, every time we've cut taxes on working people, wages go down. Every time we've raised taxes on working people, wages go up. And the classic example of this is Denmark, if you're making around $40,000, $50,000 a year, you're paying about 43% in taxes. Almost half of your income is going to taxes. But you're making twice as much in pay. I'm sorry, Bill, we're out of time, but... Well, actually, try it. We got 10 seconds. Go for it, quick. Bill? No, Bill. Okay, Bill hung up. Anyhow, we'll continue the conversation after the break. It's 48 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around. And welcome back. Oh, my. There's a bunch of stuff in the news here today that I just wanted to hop on here. Business looks to Kavanaugh to extend Supreme Court hot streak. This is something that should concern all of us. Alexandria Glorioso, writing over at Politico, she says, you know, abortion rights and civil liberties have so far dominated the fight over Brett Kavanaugh's nomination to the Supreme Court because, you know, we all know he's going to make abortion illegal or allow the states to make abortion illegal and civil liberties. You know, he's ruled against people on a number of occasions and ruled in favor of things like torture and the having the government crash into your house and you know, threaten you and search you and all kinds of other stuff. But the business part of it is being largely ignored. And Alexander writes, industry groups led by the Chamber of Commerce have spent decades bringing lawsuits and filing briefs to the top court, the Supreme Court, in hopes of reining in regulatory power and winning favorable rulings for business. And court watchers believe Kavanaugh, who was recommended to Donald Trump by the Conservative Federalist Society and worked in the pro-business Bush administration, would help industry continue its hot streak at the court. And then they point out, this has been the most business-friendly court in the history of the Supreme Court. So some pretty strange stuff there. Andy, watching Free Speech TV in Fort Worth, Texas. Andy, what's on your mind today?
I'd just like to point out that people of color in this country, excuse me, pushed the wrong button.
Yeah, you're on, Andy. I'm listening.
People of color are treated better in this country than they are in their own countries by white people in this country. And that's why they're all coming here, because they're treated better by white people in this country than they are by their own people in their own land.
How did you learn that, Andy? What countries have you visited?
Well, Mexico for one, Iran for another. I don't have to visit a country to know how they're treating each other in Nigeria.
You've been to Iran?
Yes, I have.
And
I went with Bell Helicopter to Iran in 1973.
Okay, and
when the Shah of Iran was mistreating those people a whole lot more worse than they're being mistreated by their own people today.
Right, the Shah of Iran was a white guy.
Huh?
The Shah of Iran was a white guy.
Well, they're all white people. Those are Aryans.
Well,
they're Iranian.
Okay, they're Persians.
They're Persian, but
Andy, you know, so there are countries where the citizens are treated poorly. What does that have to do with what kind of country we want to live in?
Oh, it has everything to do because we.
Are you saying
so
put up?
Here.
Do I hear Andy saying to people of color in the United States, just you put up with my racism because I'm not as bad as the guy running?
You are to your own people. Who's mistreating all the people in Chicago on the South Side? Not white people.
Yeah, I would say it's the police, Andy.
It's the police. They're not the ones killing each other.
It's the police. Andy,
Chicago.
I'm sorry. Your racism is just a little too raw for me. I just, you know, I've hit my vomit threshold. And so I'm just not going to continue. I'm going to go back to Brett Kavanaugh. Actually, I'm not. We're out of time. We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Stick around. Welcome back. Albert in Los Angeles. Hey, Albert, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I just want to talk about democratic socialism.
Sure.
And maybe give a better definition. Basically, democratic socialism is just the democratization of resources. And when we talk about the economy, you know, we need to start talking about it instead of dollars and cents in terms of resources. You do a good job explaining things, but for some reason, it doesn't seem to be sitting in with a lot of the listeners, especially what inelasticity is. And basically, and you described that pretty well, but for some reason it's not sitting in. Inelasticity is simply saying, you know, anything that we need, you know, regardless of the price, we should band together and try to come up with some type of economies of scale to take advantage of that, because the average cost per person will go down. It's almost similar to what you were talking about with the profit motive.
Yeah.
You know, things that we need should not have a profit motive in front of that, because it's only going to drive up the cost. And if we want to lower the cost on something that we need, the obvious way to do it is to not have somebody, quote unquote, capitalize off of that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And this, for example, I've been seeing these CenturyLink commercials on TV where they go, you know, you can get the same price for the rest of your life for your internet service. And I'm like, wait a minute, shouldn't internet service prices be going down? I mean, basically everything that's tech, the price goes down. Over time, you get economies of scale, you get, you know, improvements, you know, better algorithms, better codecs, all this kind of stuff. The price should go down. Why would I want to lock in my price for life? So, yeah, excellent point. Mark in San Francisco. Hey, Mark, thanks for listening to AM910. We just have about 20 seconds here. You got a quick one?
Yeah, income
inequality. Oh, no, wait a minute. I got a minute and a half. I'm sorry. Go ahead. 30
income
seconds.
Income inequality, that's the big issue. And this tax cut, we can really point it out as welfare for the 1% corporations.
It really is. It really is. And the question is, you know, to what extent do Trump voters understand that?
Well, we went trillions of dollars in debt to give the 1% corporations this tax cut. It's ridiculous.
Yeah, I agree with you. Mark, thanks a lot for listening to AM 910, our new affiliate in San Francisco, Clear Channel Station there. Great to have you with us. And John and everybody else on hold, my apologies. We'll pick up your calls tomorrow. What a fascinating day. I haven't heard about the Manafort jury. In fact, apparently they're still deliberating. I'm wondering if there's a Trumpster on that jury who has been watching Fox News and is going, this is just an attempt to take down Trump. That's what's going on here. I'm not going to put up with it. And we're going to end up with a hung jury. If so, you know, Fox notches another one in their belt. Amazing. Anyhow, don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It requires all of us. So get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.